Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, a beautiful afternoon for a good game of football now, and it looks as though we have the makings of it.
Barnes has come in. Oh, a fine goal by John Barnes. That's a beauty.
Helgeson comes in first. Oh, it's a goal!
And a goal! Sensational! And it's there by Jenkins.
Delay!
Petro again! Would you believe it?
Welcome to the Watford Buzz podcast. My name's Tom Bodell and I'm joined once again by Jordan Weimer. We're without Matt again today. He's on a special fitness programme along with Emmanuel Dennis, so who knows when we'll see him next. Jordan, how are you? How's your week going?
Yeah, it's going well. It's good to be back here in the front two, as it's now known.
Yeah, that's it. And that's what people are crying out for, if anything.
Apparently so, yeah. I mean, we've heard a bit, haven't we? So, obviously, there's going to be lots of ideas coming out over the next couple of days with, I'd say probably the most questions surrounding approach, style of play, management, etc. So I'm sure we'll get into all that.
Yeah, absolutely. We threw out the call for questions. We've had absolutely heaps of questions. And to be honest with you, there's a couple we're just not going to get to, but I've favourited them on the Twitter and we'll make sure we get to them at a time when there's less to talk about. But as ever with Watford, it seems like there's plenty to talk about. So let's boil it down. Was this game against Norwich a case of bad start, bad finish, good in the middle? What did you make of it overall?
Yeah, just a weird game, really. We dominated at times. We were in control at times, you know, especially after we kind of got that one goal back just before half time. We kind of came out in the second half a little bit better. But yeah, just against a team that was equally as up and down within the 90. You know, I think Norwich, they were playing with some real pressure at home. You could see that. You could hear that as well from the crowd at times as well, especially after those substitutions were made. But I'd say just two teams that lacked precision, concentration at times. Still a lot of fatigue in there. Just a real kind of up and down 90 minutes that, you know, it's hard to pull a lot from because it feels so fragmented as a performance overall.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the substitution, the reaction to the substitutions. That was pretty wild. I know they've had an up and down season overall, but you know, I don't think they're in a bad position, all things considered. But yeah, that was quite something, wasn't it? Of all the questions we've had, one of the few things that didn't get covered was Ryan Porteous, which seems like as good a place to start as any. He's picked up his 10th yellow card. He's going to be suspended for 2 games after another tough night at Carrow Road. Is that a bit of a blessing in disguise now?
Well, I guess we'll find out, won't we? You know, next man up. But you know, one thing I will say, like it's been a strange season in the sense that we've often looked to the bench and the deeper parts of the squad and thought, you know, why aren't we using these players? What's going on? And then we've had a couple of moments we have seen, like sort of Healy, for example, that when he kind of finally came in, and a lot of people at the time are saying, oh, well, now maybe we see why. So maybe we'll be pleasantly surprised by the next man up, or perhaps, you know, maybe we'll see what's been keeping the likes of Siriatra and Pollock out of the team. You know, Pollock had that good little run, so you'd expect him to come back in there potentially, but... it's interesting. I'm sure there's been plenty of people that are happy that Porteous is out, of the next two games. And honestly, it does kind of feel tough to argue with them in some ways too. What about you? I almost feel
relieved is the word for him. Was it Cardiff away? He got kind of taken out for one game. I think Sierra Alta came in, and then I have a feeling he came on towards the end to help block it up and nick the point when we were in a bad run anyway. But you do wonder what it is that Ismail is seeing in his performances that he's giving him that Pollock and Sierra Alta can't. And to be honest with you, what did Pollock do particularly wrong in those couple of games, two or three games, whatever it was that he played in a row after the Southampton match? I don't think he did anything terribly wrong. It's gonna be very interesting. But it seems that there's a hell of a lot of faith from Ismail in Porteous, almost regardless of his displays. So. Yeah,
I think just when you look at Ryan Porteous, I think if you try to see, because I've done the same thing. I've looked at the team and I'm thinking to myself, what is it that Ismail sees in Porteous that he wants in the team? And the only real difference between him and the other options is there's some mobility, there's some lateral mobility. You know, you don't feel as much of a threat when that fullback gets exposed. However, there have been mistakes. Obviously, the goal, you know, the goal that came about last night, obviously he didn't quite win that duel against Ashley Barnes, and it was a situation where Tunde Bashiru kind of got played out of position and he wasn't able to do that covering. But you know, the other thing is we talk about a lot that rashness, that driving out of defence. It is clearly something that's called upon from Ismail, or called for from Ismail in regards to that defensive play, and he wants to do it. It seems to be a mechanism that he really thinks could be successful for us. I'm just not sure he still has the right man. He might be the best we have in terms of, you know, being able to dive out and get into that, engage that player, engage that midfielder or striker in that deep position, apply that pressure quickly, disrupt things, and still have the chance to get back in. But we talked about this a lot. I just don't think he's quite got the sense of when to do that, when not to do it. And also, crucially, the actual winning of that battle hasn't quite been there either, and it's been quite costly. But, you know, Ismail's been really sticking to that, and that's the only real difference I can see between him and the others. We've seen us try it with Hoot a couple of times, but Hoot's much more cautious to do so. I think he's quite aware of his own frailty in doing so, and doesn't kind of activate that so much. But yeah, it's a definite weird one.
It's funny, isn't it? You're absolutely right. I think in that mobility, you know, Pollock, it feels like a pair of shoulders. Sierra Alta is obviously quite a big chap as well. I almost feel like, could we take that mobility away from Porteous? Because he's so, you know, so keen to exercise it, so keen to use it, that's where it leads us into danger. And don't get me wrong, I'm not completely myopic here. When it works, it looks spectacular. When he goes, you know, he did it even last night. He kind of flew into a couple of challenges higher up the field. Even in the Norwich half, there was one, was it with Ashley Barnes, where he kind of comes clattering in. And I mean, he got clattered. I thought he was going to get booked initially. So, you know, when it works, it looks spectacular, and it turns the ball over in places of danger and threat for us. But yeah, that kind of cost, you know, risk reward balance is teetering, or not so much teetering, I think, very strongly pointing towards, you know, risk rather than reward at the moment. One of the first question I'll kick off with then from our fantastic followers and listeners is from Kieran Reese at Kieran_Reese on Twitter. And it's another one I think that quite a few people will have been asking, ourselves included, but it is this: what does Tom Delibashiru offer at right back? Because as I see it, he can't defend and he doesn't offer anything going forward from that position either. So focusing on the what he offers, what is it he offers?
If I had to say what he could bring to that position, the thing is it's tough, because what I would assume you would want him in there to bring is not something we've necessarily utilized that much. But his best moments from right back are when we play in that inverted position, where he comes into midfield. He kind of operates as a midfielder for a lot of the game. If we have a lot of the ball, he can come inside and give you some options. I think he is good at that. He can carry the ball forward, he can play into space, he looks comfortable doing that. Obviously, we don't really get to see that enough of him, when he's been playing recently at right back. It's a tough one. I think it's really more about depth and what we can do, what space, what positions we can cover with what we have, as opposed to it being a real kind of a tactical flair of Ismail. I think it's just a case of we don't have a backup right back right now. You know, we've got too many injuries. Andrews has had to be rested for whatever reason. I've had a couple of things, potential, you know, slight injury, missed a couple of days in training, etc. But you know, I think it really speaks more about what we don't have than what we do have in Tom Delibashiru. And you know, I always have a little bit of sympathy for the players that are asked to do that sort of role. Fortunate in a way, he was playing quite well at eight and then dragged back into that position in recent games. It's kind of not ideal for him either.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and I think he's kind of a victim of circumstance in the true sense of victim, that given Kayembe's been away at AFCON and clearly Kone has been, you know, really stretched playing so many games in such a short space of time, I think we'd have probably seen changes in midfield with Tom coming into there had the call not come at right back. I do wonder, and you touched on potentially something there, what the issue is with Andrews, why he can't play. You know, appreciate he's a talent, we don't want to kind of burn him out in the way that you see so often with these young players. It is a big physical demand on them to come into the team like that and play regularly, having stepped up from academy level, age group level football. But you also kind of think, if he's fit and he wants to do it, then just let him play. And on that note, Craig from Littleport, at GoatsWilly, great username, asks, Val's persistence with playing players out of position. Why has Andrews, who's clearly our best right back, been on the bench the last two or three games? He can't be that tired. Is there anything you can kind of, any light you can throw upon that, or anything from a kind of, you know, sports science perspective to suggest what the thinking is?
I think, you know, he's played a lot of games. We don't know the full extent of any minor injuries that he might be suffering right now. You know, I think there's a lot of players playing through injury in the team anyway. They always will be at this time of the season for, you know, a decently sized squad, let alone one of our size. So, you know, you're being a little bit careful with him. I'm not sure we're being more protective of him than others. You know, I think obviously it may seem like it, but we just haven't had the full picture on his fitness, his status, really. So look, I think he'll be back in the team next week, or this weekend, sorry. I think that's going to be one of those, it's going to be a situation we kind of have to. In terms of the information they're gathering, you know, they're able to track pretty well in the games, in training, the player's output, you know, what he's getting through and what he's able to take. And if they say, you know, he's at that tipping point right now, we just need to give him some time. We need to let him recover fully. You know, a big thing for these young players is often really kind of getting them to nail that recovery. And it is something that takes a little while. And they can often be a little bit more susceptible to breaking down with those short turnarounds. So, you know, I don't think it's... I don't have too much of a problem with it. I trust the fact that I'm sure Ismail wants to play Andrews. He's clearly our best option there. I trust that if they're not playing him, it's for a pretty good reason. Because I can't really see any kind of logical decision being made to kind of take him out of the team unless it was something that was quite necessary.
No, I agree. There's not a lot of argument there. On the opposite side, and it rather feels like we're picking apart the defence piece by piece at the moment, but that is where the kind of narrative takes us. Peter Elson at Wrong Liner asks, how poor was Lewis yesterday and could Morris be a better option? I think we all know the answer. Peter's got his preference. What say you?
I mean, I think Lewis has been in a bad patch, undoubtedly. He's just kind of been exposed defensively, not really offering too much going forwards. I don't know that Morris offers you a ton more, to be honest with you. I don't think we've got great options at left back. I think that's just kind of the situation we're in. You know, at least with Lewis, we've seen that he is capable, you know, prior to coming here, especially of being effective at this level. What we have to do to get him there is a different question. If we can achieve that or not, I'm not entirely sure. But, you know, the thing is, there's definitely been an argument raised now as to who should be playing, which says kind of everything, I think.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. When you consider how kind of Morris is held, the regard or lack of regard with which he's held in some aspects of the fan base, and this is, you know, the usual caveat of not taking all your opinions from Twitter, but certainly he's been unpopular at times. I think it says everything about Lewis's run of form, that it's a debate. I will say that, though, run of form, because I don't think he's been terrible all season by any stretch of imagination. I think he's had good spells. No. And even within yesterday's game, I thought, going forward, admittedly, he had rather than defensively. He had, you know, periods or moments where he did well and was a decent outlet, but it's those kind of defensive basics, isn't it? You know, the inability to stop wingers, stop crosses, showing wide players onto their stronger foot. I mean, you know, the Ashley Barnes goal, I don't think you need to be any kind of, there's the train, you don't need to be any kind of level of tactician to look at that and break it down and go, bloody hell, he's made it easy for O'Neill Hernandez, which was one of the subs that kind of drew a bit of ire from the crowd, wasn't it, him going off. He's made it very easy for him to get the cross in for Ashley Barnes. So, and then it was the fourth goal, wasn't it, where Jack Stacey gets the cross in for Fasnacht. So, yes, not a good night for him. Another string to this particular kind of bow, I suppose, comes from GM, no name, but Watford_GM, who says, is Semmer worth a try at left back? Doesn't score enough for a forward for me, and Martins is far better on the left. We've seen it once or twice without disastrous consequences, but is that something you'd want to see more longer term, or does that kind of disrupt the balance of things further forward if you move Semmer out of the forward line?
It may do. There's a few aspects to it. You know, I think one last thing on Lewis, or kind of in regards to this too, is I think there's a certain lack of intensity, a certain lack of tempo to his game, which I think affects him at both ends of the pitch.
Agreed.
And with Ken, you know, he does bring a level of industriousness, or industry, I should say, sorry, to his game. He does play with that. And, you know, I don't know how you feel about playing a left winger and a central midfielder at fullbacks.
That's a good question, isn't it? When you consider how much criticism Val has got for playing square pegs in round holes, GM is not the only person to have said this, made this suggestion of Ken at left back. You know, it's kind of one rule for one and one rule for another a little bit, isn't it?
It is, but I understand it too. You know, this is, again, it goes back to our squad building. We're in a situation where this is a genuine question, and I think in some ways you should definitely entertain it, and I'm sure it's being thought about, because you're getting below what's required level of play at left back. We've seen Ken play there. You know, if that's what we need to do, then I can see us doing it. I think one element to it which has to be kind of thought about is, you know, if Rajovic is starting up front, it seems that Ismail has kind of accepted that we need to have that outside delivery. We have to have the strong foot on the outside to try and capitalise on that, because we're not really get that interplay and as much potential kind of joy out of those inverted wingers. We have to kind of go to that style of play, which maybe is affected slightly. But, you know, on the other hand, it does give you something a little different offensively too. If you are having a lot of the ball, I quite like it. You know, I think about these home games, we struggle to break teams down. Have a lot of possession, but aren't really having much joy getting behind or kind of working space in those central positions. And I do look at Ken Semmer as a potential option for left backs. He does give you something a little bit more direct, but comfortable in play, like really comfortable playing in those forward areas. He's still a good athlete, good enough to cover and so on. But it's a strange situation. It's not a perfect solution, but it is a different route you could go down if you're trying to find a way out of some poor fullback play. How do you feel on Ken at left back?
Yeah, I get the point that, you know, he's not the most prolific scorer or assister, but I like him. I like him further forward. I think he's different to our other kind of wide players in that he's not tricksy. You know, he will just kind of, bit like a bull almost, just get his head down and charge sometimes. And sometimes I think you need a little bit of that. You know, we can be a little bit too finicky and try and, you know, score the perfect goal without kind of going all Wenger era Arsenal. So I think I would probably take Lewis out for a game or two. It either works in the sense that he gets the respite he needs, Morris gets an opportunity, maybe it's tired legs, you know, he hasn't played a lot of football over a lot, you know, trying to not make excuses, but think about it, you know, more holistically, he hasn't played a huge amount of football in the last year or so with Newcastle, and if Morris comes in and does horribly, then people will be clamouring for Lewis back, so he essentially can't lose, I would say, in that situation. Let's get a bit more positive. Ismail Kone, once again, we've reached that part of the pod. He was the bright spot, the brightest spot for us. I think unilaterally there's agreement on that. We sung his praises post-Leicester. Let's do it again. What kind of caught your eye with him? Do you agree with, hopefully you agree with my assessment that he was the brightest spot for us. Otherwise, this is going to be a bit awkward and I'll have to just talk about him.
No, he was. He was the brightest spot for me as well, I think. When he's in his flow, when he's playing at his level, he's just really easy to watch. He covers large amounts of the pitch. You look kind of his heat map from the game and so on. You see kind of how active he is across all areas. He gets right, he gets left, he plays central, deep, high up the pitch. In both boxes, he's active, and he's just he's a head coach's dream in terms of what he offers in that regard. Yeah, really, really good. He was solid in possession, wasn't turning the ball over a lot, got on the ball quite a lot, 56 touches overall, but he's looking to pick it up, as we say, in multiple places. He gives you flexibility offensively and defensively. He just gives you, he's a real platform to build off from your midfield, and every time he plays, we look stronger for it recently. So, long may it continue, because we're going to need it, especially if we're trying to find these minor adjustments to make us a winning team again. He's definitely going to be central to that. And he went down with a bit of an injury too. I think he's one that's also been carrying a bit of something. Mm. You can see with a little bit of calf issues, and he's had some issues there already this season. One more hit last night, and it was questionable. He had to try it out before he got back on, and I can guarantee you he's not going to be on the pitch for the next couple of days, most likely, and try and get back for Saturday. So, yeah, important player now, if not the most important, I'd say.
Yeah, would go along with that. And obviously a lovely little kind of reverse pass, slide rule pass into Ken Semmer to create the first goal. Probably goes underappreciated in the moment, but what vision and perfectly weighted to release Ken.
One little positive I will say as well, we're talking about the kind of midfield there, we also did have the return of Kembe last night too, which was good to see. At least that was one of the positives that came with it. So
yeah, absolutely. We'll get on to the substitutes actually in a bit, because we've got a question on that, perhaps unsurprisingly. Yasser Asprilla was the other positive, I think, if only for the absolute screamer he scored. First question for you, which is from listener Tom Bodell. Is that goal of the season, or is it still Wesley Hoot up at Leicester?
God, I think it's a spree. I think it's Yasser Asprilla.
I think it is as well.
Such a good strike, especially it's just such an element of his game that when he gets to that shooting position, you really have no idea, do you? That especially from that range, that angle, such a clean strike. The way he hits across the ball, it's such a shame that wasn't on the end of a win. It's a shame that that's a 4-2 loss that we see that goal in, but it just shows, it's another fact or another example of the quality that he possesses. And honestly, I'm all up for giving these players some highlight reels and kind of improving their stock a little bit.
No, absolutely. Well, his stock is improving week by week. I did my bit by sharing it in the family WhatsApp group earlier today. Friend of the pod, Vic Bait, at Bait Vic, asks, where do we see Asprilla going in the summer? Not sure he's ready for the Premier League, but could see him flying in a more technical, less physical league, perhaps La Liga or one of the Portuguese giants, as he's been linked with. What do you reckon? I'm working on the basis he's probably the most saleable asset and we need to sell players this summer. Any disagreement on your part?
No, I think he's one that we're looking to sell, when we can, and yeah, he's a great option for it. I think I'm not sure that Premier League clubs will come calling. I think there'll be interest for sure. Whether or not that's the best thing for his career is a little hard to say. Really depends on the situation. I think he'll do well there, but the minutes might be a little bit more limited. He's not quite the well-rounded product that João Pedro was when he left, was he? So. Yeah, I mean, that Portugal will be a good move for him, no doubt. I think Lisbon were the ones that were linked with him, wasn't it? Sporting Lisbon. In the final days of the January transfer window, so there's every chance they come back. And obviously, they've had some success with dipping into the Championship for players in the last couple of years. So, yeah, I mean, I just want to see him get a good move. And I think he deserves it. I think he's starting to show some real promise. And, a smart club will look at him and think he's worth a go for what I imagine will be a moderate fee for us, but still pretty favourable for the buying team as well.
What sort of price would you put on it, do you think? What do you think we would take to let him go this summer?
Oh, it's a tough one. I think it depends on... It's really just going to depend on what interest we have. You know, I think that... I wouldn't want to put a number on it too definitively, but you know, I'd say we're kind of looking around the 15 plus, 18, 20, you know, around that sort of range. I think, it depends on the interest we have and how the deal kind of evolves. But I think the reality is we'd probably accept a little bit lower than what we'd want if we had to, because of how crucial that asset is as a saleable asset, as you say. What are you thinking price wise?
Yeah, I think so, and I think that's cheap as well, to be honest with you, for the player he could be.
It is, but yeah.
I think the problem is we see what he can do, but and it's tempting to go, well, you know, we got 30 million for Pedro with not much more of a body of work, but he did have that, you know, a bit more of a body of work. He was the kind of the key man, wasn't he? He was the totemic figure in that team last year, captain at times, top scorer.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Gore, I think I'm right in saying, had played in the Premier League a bit before that. You know, he probably had another 12 or 18 months on a spree in terms of his development by the time he left the club, that is. I actually quite like the idea of him going to Portugal. I must admit, you know, those clubs probably don't have the cash to spend that a Premier League, well, certainly that a Premier League club doesn't, a Premier League club has, and probably clubs in the league as well. But I think Sporting have thrown a reasonable amount around. And as you rightly say, obviously dipped into the Championship last year to sign Victor Gyökeres from Coventry for a decent fee. And the expectation is that he will probably move to the Premier League this summer for an even bigger fee. And I think Portugal, in that respect, is quite a good market, isn't it, for polishing up these players and then selling them on very quickly. So if we do sell to Sporting or Benfica or somebody, Porto, potentially, you know, you've got the option to get another kind of hit when they sell them on, and we get something from the you know, percentage of the next sale fee. So
agreed,
potentially ideal world, we obviously keep him, but I think we might be whistling in the wind for that one. At the top end of the pitch, still, here's one from Tim at Walklate88, who asks, can you find 5 statistical positives about Rajovic's performance yesterday, and did his performance indicate promise? Now, in anticipation,
five,
yes. Now, in anticipation, I have pulled out some stats. So what I thought is, I would read them to you and you can tell me what you think kind of contextually. Does that indicate positive, and just how you thought he did overall? So he was first for shots. This is out of all players on the field over the game. third for touches in the box, first for aerial duels attempted, and first for aerial duels won. He completed 11 of 13 passes. However, none of those went forward or into the final third, for context. He had the highest XG of any player on the pitch, not surprising when one of his shots was from about a millimetre out. All three of his defensive actions were successful, and he was fourth for ball recoveries in the opponent's half, which I thought was quite notable because I saw it myself at the time that he turned the ball over a few times, got the ball back in Norwich's half, which, you know, is pretty remarkable for him. So on the face of it, lots of kind of first, second, thirds there. But what do we think of those numbers and his performance in terms of the eye test, I guess?
Well, you've done well to get five there, Tom. yeah, you've done well. So you know, I think actually, in a weird way, I don't think he was great, but I think it was one of his better games yesterday in terms of I think his effort to get back and battle, I think, was better. You know, often he's just not really getting, he's often just not quite quick enough to even get involved in a lot of the duels you want him to.
Yeah.
But he was battling somewhat, and you know, he can be a little bit frustrating. He can win the ball and then not really capitalize even from winning it at times. But he was getting more involved. There's a few times that he was quite deep in our half, and he was able to kind of get involved in some challenges and at least disrupt. You know, I want your striker at least making it hard for his opponent, and he was able to do that a little bit more. I think in terms of that, it was his best display. Obviously, you know, he scored again too, and it was a tap in, but he had to get in the right position. His movement was good to be sharp enough to kind of, you know, place himself in that spot and tuck it away, even though it wasn't the most convincing finish, but he finished it. So I can't complain too much there. I still think we need something different from striker, but in terms of looking at his kind of sample of games that we've seen from him, it was one of the better ones from an all-round perspective, I'd say. You know, as you say there, you picked out some numbers, which it kind of does demonstrate that a touch too. And yeah, I like the fact that he's at least getting on the ball a little bit more and finding ways to involve himself. Because it doesn't, you know, 27 touches doesn't sound like that much, but for Milita Rajovic, it's quite a lot higher than what we've seen from him. Yeah, and also too, you know, he had 9 aerial duels, didn't he? He won 3, which, you know, he doesn't often win them. Doesn't often win them. He's good at getting in the right spot when it comes in, you know, the ball into the box, and he'll find ways to get headed shots on goal. He's actually, you know, he's good at taking advantage of those situations. The ball's deflected, and he kind of finds a way to get on the end of it. His timing's good, but it's still a different skill from actually kind of, you know, battling against another defender or against a defender and winning that duel, which he doesn't do too often. So, you know, he still lost the ball 7 times, but he was more active, because too many times you'll look at the actions that are being taken and Rajovic is often not really even involved.
Yeah, no, I quite agree. I thought, especially early on, I was like, making notes as I went along, and there was the chance, won it back in their box, but as you said, you know, what he did after winning it, the shot was a bit rubbish, kind of deflected off someone and Angus Gunn caught it. He won it quite high up the field, should have slipped it through for Livermore, who had run beyond him, didn't. And then there was probably the worst one of the lot, where he nicks it off Ben Gibson over on the kind of left-hand side of the penalty area. You've got Martins screaming for it, running through. And he sees him, and he tries to do it, and he doesn't. And, you know, if it was anyone else, you might go, oh, but him, you just went, oh, I never had any faith in him for picking out the run of Martins anyway. So, yes, an interesting one. And that's what the stats don't tell you, I suppose, isn't it? It's all very well and good ranking first or something, but there are some, you know, contextual things that you only get by watching the game as well.
Certainly, yeah.
Couple more questions to go. Richard Steeden at SteedRO said, Val says he was let down by his subs at Norwich, so has he thrown Dennis under the proverbial bus? In case you missed it, Ishmael said afterwards, when you make some substitutions, you expect everyone to be on top and to help the team, especially to help those players who had already been on for 60, 70, 80 minutes and worked hard. When a player comes onto the pitch, they need to have the desire to bring something for the team and to help their teammates. We felt let down in that situation. Is he just picking on Dennis, or is that kind of a dig at all his changes?
I think it'd be harsh on, I mean, Kembe wasn't on really too long to make a difference. Andrews was fine when he came on. Ince was okay. Asprey obviously scored a goal, so I think it has to be Dennis. And yeah, Dennis was pretty awful, actually, wasn't he? He spent most of the time. Most of his actions were involved in his back to goal, and you know, kind of in around the right back area more than anything. And obviously, dispossessed a number of times. Touched the ball 23 times. You know, eleven pass attempts, only six successful. Five dribble attempts, only one successful. Dispossessed. He lost possession 12 times. You know, 23 touches to lose possession 12 times is a pretty mean feat.
That's ongoing, isn't it?
Yeah, and again, these are not just losing the ball, driving up the pitch, and then trying to make things happen. It's losing it in dangerous positions where you're kind of directly impacting the team in a negative way. So, you know, I think the thing is with Dennis too, it's, you know, a lot of people are saying about him not being fit, which I'm not sure there's a question about him being fit later on or not. So I don't want to kind of get to it too early, I guess, but we'll cover it seeing as we're here.
Go for it.
In regards to him being fit, you know, I think it's not really a fitness issue in my eyes. You know, he's coming off the bench later on in the game. He's not played a ton of football, but he's a pro athlete. There's an element of match fitness, sure, but to be honest with you, you can replicate that very well. It's more about getting that match sharpness in, you know, rather than the actual kind of athletic capabilities of the player. He's not gassed after 5 minutes on the pitch. He's making poor decisions, making poor touches, poor execution within the first minute or so of being on the pitch. It's not a fitness issue that's kind of plaguing him here. He's in poor form, or when he's coming on, he's just playing poorly. The fact is, the two previous games, his impact's been really positive. You know, he looked the best player on the pitch when introduced in the last two games. Perhaps there's still some match fitness to build up. That's absolutely fine. You know, there is a factor to. There is an element of that which, you know, obviously can be relevant, but what's the answer for last night? It's not fitness. It's a player that's come on and just not played well. Why hasn't he played well? That's the question, because it was far, far different to the Dennis we saw against Cardiff.
No, absolutely. It's that kind of match sharpness, isn't it? There's being fit and, he's fit in the sense that he can run around for any given length of time. He can run quickly. Mm-hmm. I can't. I am unfit. But it's match sharpness, isn't it? And I think you kind of saw it in that build up to the fourth goal, I think, wasn't it, where he kind of just got his back kind of to a Norwich defender, loses the ball fairly cheaply, and he just looks beaten in a sense as he lies there, and they go and go down the right hand side and score. So, and that wasn't an isolated incident. So I think it's a catch 22, isn't it, in that you can only regain that sharpness by playing, but in doing so you are going to expose yourself and your lack of sharpness at the same time. So we are just going
to, I guess, to answer the question though, yes, I'd say he was thrown under the bus, wasn't he? That
yes,
was
his match. I think so. I don't think it either. The other, you know, Asprey came on and obviously scored, and yeah, I don't think Kayembe did anything egregiously bad. So couple more, final two questions here, and they're kind of more bigger picture questions, I suppose. So the first is from Craig at Craig HBK. Do you think this team is boring and negative? I'm not seeing it myself, but plenty seem to think so. Be interested in what the stats say. So, once again, I pulled out some stats, not necessarily the conclusive answer, but I'll throw them at you and think and hear what you've got to say as well. So, we're 7th for goals scored, we're 6th for shots attempted, 14th for XG, 13th for XG conceded, 9th for touches in the opposition box, 10th for forward passes attempted, 5th for final third passes attempted, 2nd for crosses attempted, and 5th for progressive runs. I guess a lot of it hinges on, you know, what do you define as a stat that indicates positivity? That was kind of what I thought, but what do you make of those numbers, and what's your own kind of analysis of the situation? Are we boring?
I mean, boring's a tough one. I think at times we can be, definitely. I think our approach, the way we approach games is maybe not the most exhilarating, exciting. I don't think we have quite the. I think what I will say is we don't really have that. when we go into games, we don't really kind of have that real feeling of identity is kind of where we are. I feel like we use that word a bit too much, but we've become a little bit more of a middle of the road team in every aspect. You know, we don't lean too heavily on any particular avenue. We're kind of right middle of the road, and I think the numbers reflect that too. Mm. You know, when we talk about the beginning of the season, we were, you know, top and bottom in a lot of metrics, depending on what you're looking at, because we were had a very singular focus on how we were looking to play the game. And it showed through. You know, the way we played at the beginning of the season was much different to where we are now. So now we're kind of a little bit more reactive. I think we are more passive at times. We're more about staying within games than blowing teams away. Mm-hmm. Or really dictating games. I think that's a level of just kind of reality of where the team is in regards to the squad building that's gone on, the injury, like injury potential, injuries, fitness, etc., has kind of led to this team, which is a little bit of a half measure team. You know, we're not really dominant in any particular area.
Mm.
Where at one point of the season we were very cross heavy. You know, those byline crosses, we were blowing teams away in terms of the percentage of those that we had per game. But you know, now we're, as I said, we're much more middle of the road.
Yeah, I think that's quite a good way of looking at it, actually. It's still kind of to be established exactly what our identity is. We're not one thing or another particularly strongly, are we? Personally, I've quite enjoyed a number of our games, even games where we haven't won. There have obviously been stinkers. You know, Sheffield Wednesday away was boring. Sunderland away was absolutely miserable, and that was just watching it on Sky at home. But for the kind of middle chunk, just to go right back to the beginning, the middle chunk of the game yesterday, I thought there was some good stuff within that. You know, the Rajovic stuff, okay, Martins didn't perhaps have the best game, but Kone was a threat. And there have been, you know, even in defeats, the Leicester game at the weekend, I think most people unilaterally came away from that quite encouraged as well in terms of how we'd set our stall out in the second half. But we're not quite there. It's a work in progress, I think, is the kindest thing you can say we are.
I think the thing is that the numbers really reflect that we are a mid-table team. There's nothing that really... Yeah, there's nothing that really kind of says that we're not. You know, I think the thing I'm definitely been surprised with some elements. You know, I think there's definitely a lot of factors which I wasn't expecting, and the difference between the beginning of the season and now is so stark. If you go back and watch those early games, or just watch some clips of those early games, it's a real big difference. And you know, I feel for the coach in that capacity. We didn't bring him in. We brought in a coach that has some traits, you know, from his history as a coach. You kind of look at the teams he's managed and how he's operated. There's definitely think parts to that his game that he likes to include in pretty much every team he's been at, which he hasn't really been able to do with us due to, you know, some external factors, and you know, squad depth and size and so on really does affect that for him. But yeah, I think we're just kind of a weird accumulation of players and mismatched or kind of misplaced players in different, you know, we're talking about Ken Semmer at left back and Tom DeLibershire at right back. It's not ideal to have a team that's consistently producing performances. And you know, you say we've enjoyed some, and I have too, but we are up and down, and that middle of the road in terms of our kind of placement and all these metrics is not so much every game we're average. Just there's lots of up and down. You know, we have some games, even for example, you look at you know, passes per defensive action from, as you know, kind of as a pressing metric, we're at 10th. But some games we're kind of right up there towards the top end of the table. Other ones we're much more passive and not. It's just because we don't have real consistency in performance. So it does lead to what can be seen as quite a boring team or a stagnant team. But I do feel like we're only really a couple of changes away from being able to be a little bit more positive. It's just that the real question is whether we see those changes or not.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's almost a case as well to say that being middle of the road is more boring than being, you know, bottom of some of these metrics as well, right? In a sense of, if you know, not in a good way, but it might as well be if you can't be interesting, you might as well be awful. You know, in a kind of perverse way, gallows humour and all that. So, go on.
Or generally have a tendency towards one. You know, generally you might be a mid-table team, you're a little high. It's a little stranger to be middle of the pack in all regards. No, we're slight. Basically, we're slightly above average in a lot of metrics. Slight, you know, crosses we're a little bit higher than the championship average. You know, goals were a little bit higher, shots were a little bit higher, field tilt a little bit higher, possession a little bit higher, goals conceded a little bit worse, shots conceded a little bit better, long balls a little bit higher. There's lots of things we just kind of around that. There's no one real standout. I'm just trying to look through, so there's anything, you know, highest end we is really the crosses, isn't it? That's kind of the thing we do more than most teams. Even there with sixth, you know, pressing intensity, we're right down the bottom in some areas. No, it depends what metric you're using, but you look at intensity and efficiency, 19th and 16th, we're not really, you know, we're just kind of in that spot right now. And I think until we see changes to the squad, it's going to be hard for that to change too much. I think we are going to be that sort of team right now where we kind of play the field pretty evenly and try and capitalise where we can. But that's unfortunately kind of where we're going to be for the next few months, in my opinion.
That's it. And as you rightly say, we're kind of averaging everything and we're kind of slap bang in the middle of the table as a result, which leads me on nicely to our final question, which comes from Vic Bate, who managed to sneak a second one in. What represents a good season now? Top half for me, he says. What do you think? I think I'd probably go along with that, but I could see us sliding probably anywhere down to the lower reaches of mid-table if we have a particularly poor run, which we are already on.
Yeah, top half is probably it. You know, as long as the playoffs are still alive, then you want to see them push for it somewhat. I think the question is, you know, I think if you're the owner right now and you're looking at this trying to be objective and trying to be realistic, you'd say, look, playoffs are probably a difficult proposition now. Do you give some freedom to the head coach? Do you say, look, we tried this thing at the beginning of the season, it didn't work out, or it wasn't consistent enough, we felt like it was maybe too much of a risk, there's some immediate pressure, we've got to stay close to that playoff pack, we've got to rein it in a little bit and just kind of work on the now a little bit until we get help from the market in the future. Would you say to your head coach, okay, you know, you've got some license now to try and instill what you want to do longer term with the squad that's not ideal? You know, we're going to have some bad results, bad performances, but we're also going to start to get those players that will be here next year a little bit more climatized to that football we saw at the beginning of the season, because that is the ultimate goal. I spoke to some of the coaching staff over the summer a little bit, and they were very positive and really positive about how the team were taking to kind of the football they wanted to play, how the season started, obviously that QPR game, but even the early games in general, the performances were good. You know, the results maybe weren't ideal at all times, but the performances were really, really decent, I thought. I was much better. I was okay with that risk that we were taking at the time. I thought even if it did leave us a little bit further away than where we could have been, if we'd been a bit more of a, you know, basic team, I think the long-term ramifications of it were still positive, so long as we committed as a club to that cause, which is obviously the real issue. So I think you should give that freedom to the coaching staff and in turn to the players and try and bring some positivity back, because there's two ways you can do it for me now to finish this season well and feel good about it. Either we start to play some football we can be a little bit proud of, or at least kind of we can feel, you know, somewhat valiant to try and do something a little different. I don't think it gets too many people excited or entertained when it's just this kind of middle of the road football. Or the other option would be kind of reverting to what we've seen from Ismail at other teams, you know, a little bit more direct, stretch the field a little bit more, get some more intensity off the ball, work on those foundational elements, which I think he wanted to include more of at Watford, but has been somewhat restricted, because honestly, that sort of football doesn't really lend itself well to the smaller squad in the league, which is a big problem for us. So for me, top half finish, also, let's see what we're trying to go towards next season. You give the guy a five-year contract. This is not the five-year plan. So let's see what he wants to do and revert a little bit back to that kind of more free-flowing, risky, but potentially rewarding approach that we saw at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I think he's in a pretty enviable and in a sense, and not in all senses, but, it, you know, rare position as a Watford head coach. There isn't that immediate pressure to win promotion, get in the playoffs or stay up because we've achieved it. So, you know, he's got the security of that contract and evidently has has the kind of backing and the belief of the decision makers at the club. So, yeah, we're not going up, we're not going down, all being well. There is no excuse almost not to experiment. I guess the excuse is the limitations of the squad, but it's a good opportunity, and especially as he's meant to be plugged into that recruitment piece, to work out, you know, who's going to be part of this longer term and not, because I'm sure we're going to see probably, you know, change again this summer in terms of getting rid of more high earners, older players, and kind of reshaping the squad a little bit more.
Well, I think I think we also have to consider, does Gino really feel that we are out of the playoff picture, or does he think this is good enough and should be competing? Because I think that's part of the problem. I think that's what's led us down the route of having to adjust a little bit too, is that, again, we have to chase the pack and be a little bit more conservative. We can't play with the risk that we maybe wanted to earlier on, because, you know, you're talking about turning some of those draws into losses, you know, potentially the other way too. But clearly our game plan is relatively safe. You know, we talked about before, but the reason why we have been that kind of late scoring team, or you know, games have been quite close, we're not leading for large amounts of minutes during games, is because we are relatively safe in a lot of ways. And it's tough to convince a coach to stray away from that when he has some feeling of, you know, we need to do something now. I don't think it's benefited us long term or even in the short term to have that approach and to apply that pressure to the coach, really. But that's kind of my interpretation of what we've been seeing. Because we, as I said already, that wasn't the idea at the beginning of the season. I know for a fact that they want to do something different. There was definitely a hope they'd have more support to help facilitate that. And I think they're probably clinging on to that now a little bit for next season. But yeah, it's from start to finish, or well, from this kind of change in direction, it really just feels like a lot of half measures in every capacity, which has hurt us a little bit.
Well, thank you very much for tuning into the latest episode of Watford Buzz. Thought we'd bring you a bonus one, seeing as it felt like a pretty significant night, unfortunately for the wrong reasons, at Carrow Road. We thoroughly appreciate all the questions we received. If you ever have a question, just tweet one of us. It's at Watford Pod, at Jordan Weimer, at TB Bodell, and at Messi Messiano, and we will always try and include it on the show. We've got a couple that we're going to hold over until we have a quieter week, but as I said at the top, Watford do not always provide those. In the meantime, take it easy, and we will speak to you again after what will hopefully be a victory to get us back on the right tracks at Rotherham. Take care.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Marc Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Marc.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.